Welcome to the Cuban Family Roots Podcast, a monthly podcast dedicated to discussing Cuban history and ancestral roots. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. As a genealogy enthusiast, I created the Cuban Family Roots Podcast to help others in their genealogical journey. I conduct interviews with Cuban researchers and geneticists, authors, and those with knowledge and expertise in Cuban history and genealogical research. I'm committed to conducting interviews that will point to genealogical information and resources to lead family historians in the right path to finding their family roots. From 1492, when Columbus claimed the island for Spaniards, to present-day Cuban, our history has been rich and traumatic. Now our family history is slowly vanishing due to archival despair. Cubans inside and outside the island yearn to capture, learn our past, our origins, and our ancestral roots. Knowledge of our history is the key to keeping our Cuban family roots alive. I hope you enjoy listening to each episode as much as I enjoy producing them. The Cuban Family Roots Podcast can be heard on Spotify, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, and many other platforms. You can support us by simply listening and engaging. Welcome to another episode of the Cuban Family Roots Podcast. I'm your host, Aileen Vega, podcasting from Woodbridge, New Jersey. It is April 2022. Today's episode is about the forgotten history of the Koreans in Cuba. But more than that, it is about consolidating, coping, and internalizing one's multiple identities. Us Cuban Americans know this and have felt this all too well and all too long. The question of self-identity was one which Joseph John wrestled with most of his life as a Korean American. In 2015, he went on a hiking trip to Cuba, where he coincidentally met a Korean-Cuban woman who introduced him to her family. It was through them that he learned about their ancestors and what brought them to Cuba. But Joseph also learned about Jerónimo, a man who found how to cope with one's multiple identities, and inspired Joseph to film an award-winning documentary by the same name, Jerónimo. Before we move forward with the interview, let's explore a bit about the Koreans in Cuba. We'll be right back with the forgotten history of the Koreans in Cuba. In 1905, 1,033 Koreans boarded the SS Lifford to Mexico. In their minds, this was a journey towards prosperity in the New World by Imperial Japan. The reality that awaited these immigrants was a life of indentured servitude in the henequen plantations of Mexico, harvesting an agave that was then known as the green gold of Mexico. Later, they fled to Cuba, hoping to get into the lucrative sugarcane industry. When they arrived, the industry had taken a nosedive. By this time, Korea was in the hands of the Japanese colonizers, and Cuba, because they were again destined to hard labor in the henequen plantations. Jerónimo Lim's father, Xiaotang Lim, was 2 years old when he arrived to Cuba. Havana, Matanzas, and Cardenas were the cities with the biggest Korean communities throughout the island. This is also where Jerónimo Lim and his family lived. Jerónimo was born in Cuba, and as a Cuban, according to Aaron Goodman, Jerónimo participated in the affairs of the country. A devout Marxist dedicated to the socialist cause until the end, in his final years, he was exposed to the appeals of both capitalism and Catholicism. After his successful revolutionary effort on behalf of the Cuban people, Jerónimo eventually turned his effort to the Korean community, which had previously had very little visibility or organization. Goodman from Starrock, Cuba writes that Jerónimo Lim undertook a transformative trip to South Korea in 1955, following efforts to reunite diaspora Koreans to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Korea's independence. Jerónimo's grandchildren visit his homeland for the first time and pay homage to Korea thanks to the support of the Overseas Koreans Foundation, the National Korean Association, La Asociación Nacional Coreana, the National Korean Association, formed through Jerónimo Lim's tireless efforts to launch the first annual census of people with Korean blood. The association had not been recognized by the Cuban government. Another organization, the Havana-based club Martiano Amistad Cuba-Corea, doubles as a museum, also known as the Museo Coreano in Miramar. Two monuments commemorate the Korean legacy in Matanzas and in Manatí, thanks to Jerónimo's solemn heroic efforts to commemorate the 80th anniversary of their arrival to Cuba. The idea of filming Jerónimo as a documentary of the life of Jerónimo occurred as a result of Joseph John's trip to Cuba in 2015. Like many Americans, Joseph went to Cuba to have a good time, but little did he know that this trip was going to change his life. Joseph always wrestled with the question of self-identity and what it's like to have multiple identities. Although later in life, Jerónimo seemed to have reconciled being Cuban-born of Korean roots, this inspired Joseph to create the film. In his own words, Jerónimo is an attempt to unveil a forgotten chapter in the history of Korean diaspora, and a reminder that a search of one's identity is a common journey for all humanity. Joseph John, director of Jerónimo. Jerónimo is Joseph's first feature film, which has been accepted in 18 film festivals around the globe and opened in theaters in Korea in November 2019, receiving one of the highest audience ratings that year. He is currently working in his next feature documentary project, Chosen, which is about five Korean Americans that ran for U.S. Congress in 2020, four of whom were elected. Joseph earned a bachelor's in film and video at UC San Diego and a law degree at Syracuse University College of Law. Today with us, we have Joseph John, and he's going to be talking about a film that he produced called Jerónimo about the Koreans in Cuba.
Hello, Aileen. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It is truly a pleasure. I had an opportunity to see the movie Jerónimo, and I fell in love with it. It's a great movie, and kind of like get some perspective on that.
Sure. Let's turn back the clock to 120 years ago. And it's important to understand the historical context of Korea at the time. On their paper saying that there's this country called Mexico, which is like heaven and earth. The life there is incomparable to the life in Korea, and that a lot of laborers and farmers should come there and work for 4 years and return to Korea with fortune. Mm-hmm. So 1,000 Koreans signed up to cross the Pacific Ocean to go to Mexico, only to realize that they're being sold as indentured servants. So they start to work in henequen farms, which is like a cactus farm. Mm-hmm. The plant ropes are made out of henequen plants. So Koreans work in henequen farms, kind of like slaves, kind of like indentured servants for 4 years. A lot of them wanted to return to Korea, but they couldn't because Korea soon gets annexed by Japan. So they become stateless people. So they continue to work in henequen farms across Mexico. And around 15 years later, there goes around another rumor that said, hey, there's this country called Cuba across the Caribbean Sea. That's like heaven on earth. And you can earn a lot of money by working in sugarcane fields. So let's go there. So 300 of Koreans out of 1,000 people sign up to go to Cuba. And that's where the Korean-Cuban history begins.
Wow, so interesting. Many immigrants, immigrated, whether from Korea to Mexico, from Mexico to Cuba or, elsewhere for the same reasons, right? Better life, fortune, opportunity for labor and things like that. Mm-hmm. So how does this all tie with you and the film in 2015 and that trip changed your life? Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it changed your life?
Yeah, so I'm not a history buff, or was I always into the migration history? Although I am someone who's always been interested in the idea of identity and what does it mean to be Korean? I'm Korean American. To be Korean outside of Korea. That question has always bothered me from you know, when I started living outside of Korea, I was born in the U.S., but I went to Korea at 3 and then came back when I was 18.
Oh.
So the bicultural identity, the multi-identities, how do I cope with it?
Right.
Am I supposed to be more Korean? Am I supposed to be more American? If the latter, what does it mean to be American? Or what does it mean to be diasporic Korean, right? All that kind of question.
Mm-hmm. I think so, all immigrants have that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interestingly, before I went to Cuba, I've had a chance to live short term in many different parts of the world. For instance, China. And I ran into Korean ethnic Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
When I was backpacking across Germany, I ran into Korean Germans. When I was living in Brazil for a few months, I ran into Korean Brazilians, Korean South Africans, Korean Jordanians. I mean, you name it.
Wow.
So as a result of having encountered so many different types of Koreans around the world, I already always had this innate interest and triggered me for my decision to go to Cuba. It was just purely a backpacking trip. I wanted to enjoy a week for myself. And at the time, I was a practicing attorney in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, okay, I'm going to give myself a well-deserving one-week break from having completed a year. It's an impromptu decision. I'm going to go to Cuba. And I, you know, asked Casa Particular for a driver to pick me up from the airport because I didn't really speak Spanish at the time. And the driver comes and, you know, she's holding up a sign at the airport, Jose Marti Airport. And I was looking around. You know, I'm looking for a driver who should look like, you know, Cuban, like in the traditional sense of how Cubans look like, either Latina or Afro or, you know, Spanish, whatever, right?
Right, right.
But there's this Asian-looking woman holding up a sign that has my name on it, and so I was like, huh, you know, did they send out an Asian driver because they knew I was Korean? But I never disclosed that I was Korean, and I was coming from Canada because at the time there's no direct flight from New York to Havana.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to her, and I immediately thought she must be Chinese because the probability of, you know, Chinese around the world is so much higher than, you know, spotting Koreans.
Right.
But it turns out that she's a third generation Korean Cuban, and she tells me that her grandpa was sold as indentured servants 100 years ago, and her father involved with a lot of movements at the time. And that immediately captured my attention and my fascination over their family history. And I ended up going back to Cuba 4 more times after to make this film.
You had no idea that there were any...
No, I had no idea. And that wasn't the intention of my trip. I just went to have fun, to try Cuban cigar, to try rum, daiquiri.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think most Americans are curious about Cuba, right?
Right.
So
for the, yeah, mm-hmm. not correct reasons, I think. Yeah, because it's not the reality of Cuba, right?
It's not. But, you know, right. Everybody's is interested in learning about, you know, the cigars and
mm-hmm.
part of the culture. You went there, you met her, and this is where the whole thing started with the film. Can you tell us briefly about and why and how does this film defies all the borders and brings meaning?
Well, so when I first met her and we were chatting in her car, when she told me that she's Korean, I become immediately interested because of my past experiences having encountered Koreans in other parts of the world. And because I think, you know, she knew that I was very curious, she asked me, what are you doing tomorrow? And then, you know, I went backpacking without specific plans. So I had all my next 5-6 days free. And so I said, I'm not doing much. Why, what do you have in mind? And she's like, oh, my family is going on a trip to Varadero tomorrow to see our uncles who live there. Would you like to join us? And I said, absolutely, let's just do it. And so next day she came to pick me up, and I got to meet her son, you know, her brother, her mother. And when I met her mother, you know, I was a complete stranger from New York, that this will be the only encounter with them and a brief one.
Right.
But she was treating me as if like she found a long lost grandson, right? And she set me down. This is before we started driving to Varadero. She set me down in their kitchen, and she brought all the artifacts and historical documents of how her family migrated to Cuba and how she misses her late husband, Jeronimo, And it really touched me, right? It was really like a life-changing experience, because you know, I went there to have fun, but here I was being surrounded by Korean Cubans who are showing their utmost hospitality to a stranger because they really want to share their story with me. So I initially did some Kickstarter crowdfunding to raise enough money for me to go back to make a YouTube clip on Korean history in Cuba. But boy, was I wrong, because it became a 3-year journey making full feature length of the film. The reason I was really fascinated by the life of Jeronimo, Jeronimo Lim, was initially, you know, the wife and the daughter told me that, you know, he was part of like the student movement, you know, during the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And something about that, I was fascinated. The fact that in the Central American country, there was this Korean young idealistic student participating in the country's cause, right? It sounded so foreign. So that's immediately what, you know, played as a hook. But the more I got to know about Jeronimo, he wasn't just a student revolutionary. He was, in fact, someone who tried to find meaning in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And as people will realize when they watch the film, he dedicates the latter half of his life really trying to discover his roots. And I think he did that because they banned any attempt for ethnic communities to really claim their identity, so to speak, for a while, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone was supposed to be one Cuban under big one Cuban umbrella, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's what happened to Koreans in Cuba too, right, after revolution. And Jeronimo was also a byproduct of that. But towards his, when he turned 60, I think he started feeling this sense of void that one of the things that his father told him when he was young was like, Don't you ever forget our history. Don't you ever forget where you come from. Don't you ever forget your language.
Mm-hmm.
All of which Jeronimo forgot, you know, like being part of the Cuban society. And so, later he becomes the first Korean in Cuba to be invited by South Korean government to visit Korea for the first time. And this transformative moment, because here is when he realized, wow, this is where my father came from, right? This is where my ancestors left. This is a big part of why I come to exist, but I've been turning a blind eye to identity. And so from that short trip, Jeronimo came back from Korea after his short 2 weeks trip, and he makes it his life mission to he really try to revive and rediscover the sense of Korean identity among Korean Cubans, right? And, you know, it was when I discovered this part of Jeronimo's life that I really wanted to make a movie on him, because Jeronimo was struggling with the same question that I struggle with, or any of my Korean American friends struggle with. That is, what does it mean to be Korean living outside of Korea in a foreign land? And I felt like Jeronimo sort of figured out for himself what that means to him, and how to resolve. Yeah, how to resolve this bicultural identity, right?
That it was so beautiful that he letters to his children. I was like, wow.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, in fact, one of the last chapters in that letter that he wrote for his children is, by the way, it's a 27 page letter that he left for his children, and the daughter tells me that my father, he didn't have any fortune, just like many Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have many materials, but my father always told me that if there's anything that I can leave for you, my children, it will be this letter. So please, you know.
Yeah,
and one of the last chapters in the letter is actually called Homeland, La Patria.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I've actually wrote down a few lines that I'm happy to read it over if you're interested.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so homeland. Homeland is the legacy of selflessness of our ancestors and the offering of our martyrs. It is homeland is the inspiration of those that dream of a better tomorrow and of a future brotherhood. The concept of motherland extends beyond geographical borders. Homeland is not limited to those that are born in a specific place, nor does it abide by the political norms of a selfish nationalism. The patriotic feeling should merge with the hope and the cry of the dispossessed, of the exploited that aspire and fight for a better world. Homeland is the dignity and honor of those who know how to deserve it.
You know, in every community, there's always like that one person that always winds up having that responsibility, you know? And I think Aronimo is that person.
Sure, sure. I would call them visionaries. And we all have Aronimo in our own community.
Right.
I think he was driven by this conviction, Aileen, on his own realization, because he was one of the very few fortunate Korean Cuban who had an opportunity to visit the motherland and saw what it meant for him to rediscover his other side of identity and how empowering that experience was. As I was alluding to earlier, in Cuba.
Right. Can a Cuban Korean find like their roots, and are there any like programs or organizations that can help them in that journey?
So South Korean government has what's called a Overseas Korean Foundation. It's like a quasi organization under, you know, foreign ministry, where they have a program to invite Korean descendants around the world once a year. And they recently started inviting Korean Cuban descendants, right? So the program is similar to actually Birthright program for Israel, right? Identity forming programs and things of that nature. So there are some government organizations that, invite Korean Cubans to find their roots and visit their motherland and things of that nature. But, you know, there's limits to this program because South Korea has no diplomatic relations with Cuba. So all these programs are occurring in a non-official capacity. Mind you that South Korea has no diplomatic relations with only two countries in the world, Syria and Cuba. So it is one of their priorities actually to form diplomatic relations with Cuba. And after that, I think there will be much more robust cultural exchanges.
Is it hard for Koreans to do their family genealogy?
I would think so. First and foremost, because we're talking about a group of Koreans who left Korea in 1905 during a very turbulent historical social moment. Mind you that soon after Koreans left Korea in 1905, Korea was colonized by Japan for 40 years. And following the liberation was turned into ashes, basically, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of historical ruins and, you know, artifacts are lost or burned down during those periods. And so I can't imagine, you know, the relatives and family members of these Korean Cubans, Korean Mexicans kept their records. And even if they did, there's virtually no way for these Koreans to reconnect with their family members after, you know, literally 5-6 generations removed.
Right. Yeah, that's tough.
Unless there's a governmental level effort to really reunite these family members, I would find it realistically, pragmatically, it would be very difficult.
See the film Geronimo.
They should go. So it's on Vimeo, vimeo.com, on demand / Geronimo. Or if you just type in Geronimo documentary on Google.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Geronimo with a J, not G.
Right.
If you type it with G, it will be Native American warrior. That shows
right,
up.
Right.
one should be able to find how to watch it. There's a link where you can rent it for just a couple bucks.
And for those people that watch the documentary, what message do you want them to leave with? What do you hope they could get from this movie?
If you're a member of a diaspora whether Korean, Cuban, or otherwise. I just wanted them to know that it's okay. It's okay to wrestle with confusion. It's okay to struggle with the idea of dual or multi-identities. At the end of the day, it's all about, you know, going on a journey to find oneself. And if your ethnic background can help you find yourself better, then by all means, you should explore that option. And I think Jeronimo is someone who struggled with these questions all his life. And he came to his own conclusion, which I happen to really to love and admire.
By the way, did you learn Spanish after you went to Cuba?
Un poco. Yo estudio español hoy.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Or these days, I use Duolingo to continue to learn Spanish.
Will you be going back to Cuba again? Or
Aileen, you know what's interesting is last year, 2021 was actually a centennial year.
Uh-huh.
100th year since Koreans first arrived in Cuba. So, you know, South Korean government and so many civil organizations here in the U.S. and other parts of the world wanted to host a centennial event in Havana.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously we couldn't because there's COVID crisis, and there's also, you know, pretty bad political issues in Korea in Cuba last year.
Right.
So there's a delegation that wants to travel to Cuba very soon. And I wanted to join them, but it's so difficult to get to Cuba these days, right?
Yeah, I heard that they opened up now, but I don't know how true that is.
Mm-hmm. So I'm on standby. I would love to pay a visit back and to reconnect with so many Korean Cubans.
Is Jeronimo's family still in Cuba, or did they?
Yeah. So half of his family members are in Cuba. The other half are in Miami and elsewhere in the U.S.
Well,
certainly.
But thank you so much for sharing Jeronimo with us. It was a very beautiful movie, and I wish you all the best. And keep in touch with me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Aileen. I had it's been a while since I had to recollect my memories of making Jeronimo because I'm working on my next film. But I had a great time, and thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and like to help support the Cuban Family Roots podcast, please share it with others, post it on your social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Cuban Family Roots, or on Twitter at Cuban Family Roots Podcast, or Facebook at Cuban Family Roots Podcast. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.